I will begin. I think we probably should have had this as a hike day, but it happens that it is the day for a celebration in terms of women and girls, and therefore I think men and boys. It really ought to be a complete completion rather than a beginning. But all those of you who know anything about federal legislation, it's merely a beginning and not an end. Today at midnight, there should be a historical end to any form of discrimination in sex, because of religion, because of color in our schools of this country. There certainly have been many, many precedents set for women. 1838 is the first time that women were admitted to any collegiate institution, and some of you may know that's Oberlin College. Our next important move probably was that both boys and girls could have their education supplied through the Kalamazoo Act of 1872, which said your taxes can be used for high school. And that, of course, was a monumental kind of decision, which means it took exactly 100 years from 1872 to 1972 for the Educational Amendment Act to be passed, which would prevent discrimination against any person within the educational system. Now, obviously, because of the way our society runs, there has to be a penalty in order to force any kind of action. And the penalty, starting at midnight tonight, will be that if you have any form of discrimination in any primary, secondary, or collegiate institution, private or public, which receives more than either directly or indirectly $10,000 from the federal government, then you may have no form of discrimination. This would mean every Lutheran college in the country is affected by it. Almost all parochial Lutheran high schools and grade schools are affected by it, and every public high school, public junior college, or elementary school is affected by it. So it's a terribly important piece of legislation. Its purpose seemed essential because we did not have sex blindness in our institutions, just as we barely can say that we don't have color blindness in our institutions. All of these are included in the Educational Amendment Act. The blacks, probably from the Supreme Court decision of 1954 in terms of integration, did have protection. The Civil Rights Act, or Title VI and VII, was also significant to them. But Title IX is the only one that has dealt directly with education. I would venture a guess, if we had been fulfilling our Constitution in terms of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, and the 14th being the Equal Protection of the Law Amendment, there would be no need for the Educational Amendment Act, but it was not, and has not been fulfilled, primarily because the court system is an expensive system. And I might get equal protection of the law in order to get into a shop class, for example, but it's going to cost my parents and I a bundle of money to be able to do that. If any of you know what the Bakken case cost, which had to do with getting admitted into law school as a male white as opposed to a female or as opposed to a black under the quota system, you know that it's almost impossible for the average or average low income bracket to be able to file a suit of any kind. And so the Department of Labor, through the Equal Employment Act and Title IX, is perhaps the easiest way that one has gone about finding ways of filing grievances. Now, the Act itself has a history, and a history in which some of your congressmen had a part. The Act itself, the Educational Amendment Act itself, the sex was really a rider on it. Somebody added sex. It was dealing with busing originally, and it was dealing with a lot of other issues. But it became the issue primarily in its larger sense because of athletics. And society was perfectly willing to accept that girls' brains ought to be educated the same as the males, that they ought to be admitted, if not too many, that they ought to have access to shop, even if an elective, that they ought to have access to many of the opportunities. They also ought to be able to be dealt with as an individual and call it a health provision in terms of pregnancies and those kinds of things. All of society was willing for that. But all of society was not ready for women in sport, and certainly not the commercialized aspects of athletics. If any of you know the NC2A, it's the National Association of Athletics for Men, and it is the most powerful lobby group that we have in the educational system in Washington. And they began lobbying at $450,000, which it's costing some of your schools. If any of you had children in or young adults in college, they are paying the fees, which is paying for the lobbying against Title IX. And the statement was that athletics ought not to be a part of Title IX. First, they said, or attempted to say, it was not educational in nature, it was extracurricular. Guess who got on them then? Internal Revenue. And Internal Revenue said, you are making $1 million on TV. And if you're making $1 million on TV and you're not an educational institution, then we will start collecting taxes. So NC2A said, no, that was a mistake by our lawyers. We are a part of education. That's why we're in the business. But we have some difficulty with it, and we think it was not a part of the amendment. And so according to our figures, they have spent about $750,000 trying to prevent this day from happening. And the problem was they would not only prevent it in terms of athletics and sports, but they then were trying to prevent it in every extracurricular kind of activity or anything beyond, really, the fundamentals of reading, writing, and arithmetic. Fortunately, it was filed in Kansas City, and NEA, the National Education Association, the AIAW, which is the Association of Intercollegiate Athletics for Women, and the WEAL group, which is the Women's Equality Action League, all fought it and prevented it having a last-minute possibility. But the fight for Title IX has gone on since its passage in 1972. I have been a part of the women's group, and primarily through WEAL, because WEAL is far more sensible, as I see it, than the NOW group, and is not split by what our sexual preferences are or all the difficulties being caused by the NOW group. And this is really the lobbying group that has done the most in education. It's also the one, by the way, that has gotten $6 million for studies that will help, for example, career reentry women. There's a great deal of money being spent, and it's the WEAL group working with the Women's Coalition as a result of having success in Title IX, that there is $6 million available to anybody and up to $20,000 grants for just any individual who has a plan that would help women, minority groups, or middle-aged groups, retired women, reentry into society in the work sense, or improving lifestyle in almost any way. And many of you may not be aware of this, but it comes out of the thought process and education of Title IX. One of the big difficulties also with Title IX happened to be the vocational education people. The vocational education people are men, primarily, and they were very threatened by the possibility both of vocational women teachers and that girls are all going to cut their fingers off when they move into the shop world and when they move into the mechanical world. They had a very small lobbying group that also tried to prevent Title IX in its early stages, but not a strong group. It's really the athletic group of men that were the primary groups. In the meantime, there were some women groups that were against the ERA who believed that the same problem would happen. And so there were some exceptions made in Title IX that would be a compromise measure and probably important. One of them was that if you had an all-male grade school, for example, or an all-male high school, or an all-female high school or grade school or college, and it's always and ever been that way, Title IX will not apply, with the exception of 2 years later, the military. And now, as most of you know, women have been admitted to the military, while the original Title IX legislation said that women would not be allowed in the Air Force Academy, West Point, the Marine Academy, the Naval Academy. And since then, federal legislation has prevented that. They also have that if there is a religious reason, unfortunately for us in some of the Lutheran circle, if there is a religious reason, for example, the Missouri Synod says that they will not ordain women. At one time, they said they will not permit women in the St. Louis seminary. If they always and ever had that, and they based it on biblical terms, then they could receive federal legislation or federal funds and still not have to comply with Title IX. If they once let one woman in for any reason in the last decade, or we could find it, then they would have to admit women, even if their religious preference was against it. And about the only large institution that has fought it is Brigham Young, in terms of their male population are the only ones that can be in the inner church. And they did have problems with the blacks, and as of about 2 months ago, that has been changed. As a matter of fact, we had a girl or a woman running for president of our Women's Athletic Association, and there was a campaign against her because they had not accepted Title IX, the same as the vote of not boycotting states that hadn't passed the ERA. But these were exceptions put in for religious freedom, and it does affect some of the institutions. Then the schools that had always never been one sex, unless it's supported by the state, and any institution such as the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill at one time had a regulation that only junior and senior women could attend the institution, you must attend Greensboro. And they, in the passage of Title IX and just previous to that, they must admit any woman, and in fact are not to ask sex. Except as you're already admitted and you have a dormitory reservation. They really, if anybody wants to fight it, does not have to put their sex or list their sex. And the purpose being to prevent any form of lottery for males or females. Harvard, for example, at one time wanted maximum of 15%, which they barely have as it is, 15% women, and they had between a 10 and a 15% Jewish as one of their regulations, as some state schools did. This, so that you could not prevent this anymore for any kind of religious reasons for a state school or religious preference. If we want to have 20,000 Buddhists decide to arrive on the University of Maryland's campus and they can make the entrance, you must permit them to. Then there were some other decisions that were made in the area that would permit differences. There could be differences in teaching sexuality. You could have male and female classes all the way through, if you wish, dealing with human sexuality. In extracurricular activities, you could have glee club and male voice separate by virtue of the purpose of the separate kinds. You may not have separate in the marching band. You may not have separate in the cheerleaders. You may not have separate in the pom-pom girls. And those have gone to court, and they may not be separate. Right now, the Dallas Cowboys are having difficulty as several males have applied for their short skirt girls. And they're trying to use the 14th Amendment. But if they can get it into any kind of educational sense, it will be more helpful to them. The Texas State High School Federation is in court or in the grievance procedure right now, dealing with the whole issue of the pom-pom girls, based after the kind of program that the Dallas Cowboys have.
How is that different from their youth club? If you
can have Oh, the difference is the physiological difference in voice. And that's the same physiological truth about athletics. This is why you may, in contact sports, which we'll get to, have separate, because of the proven physiological differences, and that is what they want, as opposed to that they want girls in short skirts. Evidently is not a good reason that the boy can, in fact, put on the short skirt. He cannot, in fact, probably change his voice to the female voice in it. Another one that doesn't...
physiological differences for cheerleaders.
Right.
Essential to the process.
Essential to the process of the eyeballs.
Yes.
But...
that's what it's all about.
The courts are not looking kindly upon the desires, evidently, in that particular area, but they are still fighting for that kind of freedom because of saying that it is quite different. And its purpose is quite different. Its purpose, of course, in terms of the women's movement, which is the ones who have come down hard on them, is the whole beauty contest as opposed, the passive contest as opposed to the active process in it. Another area which, again, was a political compromise was that the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts could continue to be separate even if they played in sports or in recreation centers that were supplied by the federal government or were city recreation leagues. Right now, city recreation leagues are being incorporated into the Title IX if they're using any educational facilities at all. Plus, any state that has the ERA, the recreational facilities, will have to be shared in it. The other areas of specialty, and again, obviously the lobbyist, is social fraternities and sororities may be separate, but professional ones may not. And there is no consistency or reason for that. Somebody, as a matter of fact, the national, it was really the fraternity groups that lobbied. In order to have that as a part of the regulation. Then the only other regulation in which there is a great deal of latitude, perhaps, is in the area of physical education and athletics. I'll take physical education first because you need to know when you go back to your own territories that there's an awful lot of things that's being done in the name of freedom which is not within the regulations. The regulations state that there can be no separation in physical education classes by sex, with the exception as you are competing in the class in contact sport. And they haven't defined contact sport, and they ought not to in that they aren't experts in it, but their HEW is the one, by the way, in charge of this whole thing. And HEW is not an expert in an awful lot of things that they're being placed in charge of, including the whole Social Security kinds of programs. But now they have hired one physical educator out of 100 that are doing the kinds of grievances that's going to be investigated. And they have hired some consultants that will tell them whether this is or this is not a contact sport. Right now, football, wrestling, soccer in some states, basketball are contact sports. Everything else, unless you have filed, is not. The women associations and the national federations are asking that field hockey and lacrosse be listed as contact sport. The value of it is that you can have intramural teams, therefore, that could play, while right now, lacrosse and field hockey, if they wish, you would have some cross-playing, and lacrosse rules are quite different. And if any of you know the men's lacrosse game, they body check. And the women's regulation prevents body check, which means I can take my stick and just sort of check it across your stick, which is pretty dangerous when you start dealing with male and female in the shoulder girdle area in it. Soccer, too, may have some of these same kinds of difficulties. Field hockey has had no problems because in our country, field hockey has been a women's sport. But one of the first suits came out of field hockey. Northwest University, with nothing better to do with their affirmative action program, filed a grievance, and they were supposed to be looking through these grievances, by the way, since 72. And so it was looked into. A male from Pakistan tried out for the women's field hockey team, and they were prevented from having it. AIW has a regulation which says the only way you could a male could be on a women's field hockey team is if there was discrimination in the past against the males, which obviously in 99% of the institutions is not true. And so we would not permit him to play, and other schools refused to play. And so they ultimately found, and the institution paid for him to travel to Madison to participate in field hockey if he wished, which of course he didn't wish to do after all was said and done in it. But there have been some of these cases. Another case has been a girl who wanted to take woodworking and was pregnant, a high school girl in the state of, I believe it was Illinois. And the teacher refused to have her because she was 6 months pregnant and it would be a safety hazard, as he saw it, to put varnish and sand paper, not even using the machine, and said that it, in the first place, he first tried to keep and have separate classes for males and females, and unable to do this, he then was going to at least keep the pregnant girl out, which according to Title IX could not be if she wished to be in the class. And
the varnish could be harmful to the unborn child. So
yeah, it could be, but that wasn't his, and it, nor was it the lawyer's in it. That would be up to the family in terms of the safety of the child. The unborn child was not the issue. It was the woman or the girl that was the issue in terms of her position in it. And I don't know whether she then selected to or not, but she was permitted to. Actually, the same thing is true in physical education. All pregnant girls may be in physical education as long as they wish to. And they determine when is the time that it might be harmful to them. And according to this new Title IX, high school physical educators would have to make some kind of dispensation of how she will make it up because the male doesn't get pregnant. And in terms of discrimination, although it was argued that that's a physiological difference that ought to permit some kinds of differences in the entire issue, and this was not the case. In the area of intramurals now, if you have an intramural program, it is to be coeducation, unless your intramural program is also based on competitive skill, which means if you do select even intramural teams, you only take the best from the junior class and the best from the sophomore class to play, then it might be by sex. Also, if it's basketball, for example, you would have separate teams in it, and you may demand separate teams. In other words, a high school can prevent a girl from being on the boys' basketball team if they so wish, for example, or even the intramural team. They cannot prevent them from playing in a class if they wish to play, even in the contact sports in this sort of way. In the classes, the other exception that has been made is that in the coeducation classes, you may have separate skill tests or evaluative processes for them. And it's the only area in which this dispensation was made in the whole issue. You also may have separate departments. For example, you can keep a separate vocational education of home ec and woodworking, for example, or shop. But the classes must be co-ed. And you cannot demand that the girls have home ec and that the boys have shop. You must open it if you demand one from that there must be a credit in shop, then it must be both male and female. In physical education, you may let them select activities. And if by selection you have primarily one sex, there is no regulation against that because that's interfering with the county or the state school system. So, for example, it is not good policy nor essential to have wrestling for everybody. You can have selection of wrestling or badminton, for example. Also, in the wrestling, you may prevent the girl from wrestling with the boy, and so if there's only one girl that selects the wrestling class, you still could prevent her. And that would be under the 14th Amendment, and that it would be a class action against that because not enough people are selected to take it. In shop, even if it's only one girl, however, you would have to accept her unless you divided shop by beginners, intermediates, and advanced. And you may still do that. The federal government has said they will not interfere with curriculum. They have, in a sense, by telling you that you have to have co-ed classes, which then sometimes changes what you're going to do. Also, in physical education, you could have beginning badminton, beginning swimming, advanced badminton, and you might well have primarily boys if your skill test in order to get into the class was discriminatory, or even if it wasn't, or tennis, the same thing. I have few men, for example, in my co-ed tennis class as a result of the whole program and content. In every other area, there is to be no discrimination within the curriculum. But also affected by this is employment, financial aid, and that's employment of students, employment of teachers, employment of help. Everybody within a school system is under Title IX. And if Secretary A is a woman and she makes $10,000, Secretary B is a male, and even if he has they have therefore tried to call him an administrative assistant, but he really has the same duties as Secretary A, then the price tag on their salaries must be exactly the same. If you have an elementary school system of, say, 8 elementary schools and all of them have male principals, you might be filing a grievance against discriminatory action for women. In physical education, for example, the County of Los Angeles has filed a grievance with HEW because they merged 48 departments of physical education. Guess how many women got the job? This is one male and one female have been in charge of the program. 48 went to men, all 48 of them. That comes under Title IX, and grievances may be filed. Plus, there is an affirmative action statement in Title IX, which says if you've been deprived in the past, you must take affirmative action in the present. So if we do merge, or we only have one tennis team, even if I may have had slightly less experience than my male counterpart in coaching, but I've been teaching for 10 years longer, then if the male gets it, I could file a grievance based on that I've been discriminated in the past, so I couldn't possibly have 10 years of teaching experience. It's a little like what the SEM has done in terms of women, that you must have 3 years in the parish, but nobody will give you a job in the parish to go on and do something else, and so you can't do it. But Title IX has tried to cover that in this area. Also, in the job category, some high schools even give jobs, work-study kind of jobs, to often athletes, even on the high school level. They begin this kind of paying for athletics. And in that area, they can't hire 10 boys to paint the school, high school even, and only one girl, if there was a pool of a larger number that wanted it. In financial aid, it's terribly significant in the colleges because there cannot be scholarships given only for males. For example, we now have, what's the one that includes athletics? The scholarship for, that has been male, the prestigious. No, not the Heisman Trophy, but it's they go to Cambridge. The Rhodes Scholar is now open, finally, to females. And that's a result of Title IX, that you cannot have a scholarship based on sex unless you have an equal scholarship for females in all of the academic areas. Sex cannot be one of them unless you fit into the category. The negative flip part of that coin, however, is that girls have been given a $200 greater potential for financial aid by financial aid officers by virtue of being a female. and now they cannot do that. It's really how much did you make this summer? The idea being a good idea in that women could get fewer jobs and for less money in the summer so that they could not pay for their education in a greater amount, because financial aid is based on not only your parents, but what's your potential for earning. And the potential earning for women has been much less. So on some of these, there is a flip side. The other area, which is what I call the flip side, a negative in the area of Title IX, is financial aid based on athletic ability. I don't believe in financial aid based on athletic ability in order to participate in a sport for the college. I don't believe in financial aid based on athletic ability in order to participate in a sport for the college, that it's not within our educational setting to do this. If they want to give aid to somebody for talent but not require them to play, that would be all right with me. And you're going to, and therefore you might get a better supply of physical educators by giving talent money, or you're going to get a better musician by giving talent. And I see that as fitting into our educational system. I don't see paying athletes for the commercial venture of the spectator as a good idea. I don't think it's a good idea for males, and I don't think it's a good idea for females. Title IX doesn't care whether you do or you don't give them. But if you give them to males, now you must give them to females. And I think that's one of the flip side problems. This article on women in sport talks about the problems of recruiting of financial aid. And the women in this area must go the male role way if you're going to give aid at all to either one of them. Some schools really have stopped giving aid to either of them. The Ivy Leagues, most of our church colleges, with the exception of the big ones like Valparaiso, are not giving any financial aid based on athletic ability. Now, they may give jobs. And they have Concordia and Moorhead, I know, has all kinds of little things that they do, but they're listed as Division III, which is non-financial aid schools. But that one was one that our Women's Association tried to fight, and WEAL, the Women's Equality Action League, won on instead. Obviously, the men were also fighting against it, but they were fighting against it for a different reason, and of course that was that it was going to cost them something for it. But it is different from every other rule of Title IX because it says you must give it in proportion to the number of students. So we've got 105 football players. There isn't one sport we can find for women with 105 players on it. And they give 90 financial aids, or maybe it's 95 financial aids. So we can't possibly get into the proportion, which is fine with me, but it's not consistent with the rest of Title IX. But it also says that you can't have differing rules in conduct for males or females. If you tell the boys they have to cut their hair, you've got to tell the girls they have to cut their hair. If you tell the boys they can't wear blue jeans, girls can't wear blue jeans. You can't tell the girls they have to wear dresses. And when pants are a part of the immediate culture that we're in. So the rules in this sense cannot be changed. If you let the males have sports two hours away, then you have to let the females. All of the dormitory hours on the college level cannot differ. You cannot bring the little girls in now at 10:30 and the males can be out all night. Wasn't any fun anyway. But the law, which bothers me a little bit that the federal government is telling the schools what they can do. But if we think of sex blindness, then it has to be that way. Then the boys either have to be in at midnight too. And there's a lot of question of that on campuses because of the huge increase in rape, for example, on campuses. But they're trying to deal with that in other ways then, rather than in rules and regulations. And so in that sense, it is different. I'd like to have you ask some questions on it, but before that, I might say what can happen. What if your school system is not in compliance, or you want to know about it? Every school already is supposed to have filed an affirmative action plan with your county, with HEW, and parents. Any of you who are parents should have received what the plan was going to be. Now, 85% of the schools didn't bother with that, but about 90% do have an affirmative action plan someplace on file. Also, every school system and every college in the country is supposed to have an affirmative action and a Title IX compliance officer. Are any of you compliance officers in your school? The gal that does the weaving is a compliance officer in Oregon someplace. Phil, do you know who yours is? Is it the woman who's doing student? Every college, and you all should know who your compliance officer is, in that they are directly responsible to the president or to the chancellor, to the principal, or whatever. There's supposed to be one in every building, but the law, Title IX itself, says there must be in every school system. Every school district must have. I would guess yours is either that Koenig or the woman. That student personnel usually gets it. And sometime you ought to look around to see who got that office. Most of the time, if there's non-compliance, it's a meek woman or a man who is directly under the thumb of the superintendent of schools or somebody. So it really is important who it is in order to take any kind of action. In physical education, there should have been a survey sent out for what is desired by the student body. Now this one we fought against. They wanted it to happen every year, and that the students will determine, therefore, what interscholastics and intercollegiate would be. And you can imagine what a mess that would be. Well, they finally said there has to have been a survey originally, and if any group of students can prove that they wish, for example, a non-contact sport like golf, if there you have a golf team and it's primarily men, which it will be, and there is not a woman's golf team or a girl's golf team in a high school, and a whole bunch of girls get together and file a petition for a golf team, you then must have a golf team if 50% did not make, and there's 50% girls in the school, did not make the golf team. And I guarantee you 50% of them didn't make it. That's one of the big fights we had from the beginning. The NOW group wanted to have one integrated team because that would therefore not interfere with the whole sex. But the physiological differences are the hormones of male and female, which make speed and strength different on the average. Now there's going to be an overlap, but on the upper level it's going to be different. And therefore that's why the separate was put in. But if they want it, they need to have it. Also in your school, any girl who wants to try out for any team that is non-contact, she must be permitted to. But fortunately, males may not try out for female teams. Now that's only been tested once, and it was tested in the state of Indiana. South Bend, Indiana had a great women's girls volleyball team. The two boys, 1'6'2 and 1'6'3, got cut from the men's basketball team. There were equal numbers of sports in the school. There were 8 competitive sports in each school, or in both the male and the female. The 2 6'2" and 6'3" boys applied. They were not permitted on the team. They filed on the 14th Amendment with the state federation. A state judge ruled that they must let them play. They played the following year. They lost no games by more than 15-5. Obviously won the state tournament, and it was reversed the following year. And that will happen all down the line because of the physiological differences, even on the high school level. Now, this doesn't mean what they reversed, that boys could not try out for girls' volleyball teams in the state of Indiana. And Christy, the one in Indianapolis, the black school in Indianapolis, yeah, the woman coach filed the re-grievance because she lost with really pretty athletes. 15-3 and 15-5 or something in the final. I mean, there's no contest when you have a... You, in the first place, you know, we have a net that's 6 inches lower than the men's net. 7 feet, 4 1/4 inch, and men are 8 feet. So just you give that much difference, plus leg strength, and with the spiking, you know, they just picked up their arms. And the girls' rules say you may reach over the net on the follow-through. And so they tried to make the rules different, and there's no facility for making the rule different. And so they then refiled in this area. And anyway, then back to where we had the affirmative action, the survey, then any parent, any student, any faculty may file a grievance. The largest grievances being filed right now are women teachers, primarily in physical education, but also in vocation education, where a lot of them have had a lot of experience, not within the school systems, but outside, and the shop teacher is getting $13,000, and the woman shop teacher starts at $10,000 with the same numbers of teaching experiences. And it's easier to file under this, or the Department of Labor, or certainly under the 14th Amendment. And that's why a lot of people are using this procedure. You also have a grievance committee, but fortunately you don't have to use it. In other words, I can bypass. The grievance committee, for example, is made up of the president, say, the men's athletic director, and then I'm the one that's filing the grievance to have his job. And so I can skip that and go right to HEW on the regional level. There are 12 regional offices in which you can file. And all it takes is a filing. Right now there are 500 that are to be investigated by October, and that's all those that have filed before. They've had spot random check on those that have filed, and about 70% of them are someplace in the area of either employment or physical education. And then the others are in other kinds of areas. So what has to happen is to find out who's in charge, get to them, and give what your grievance is, if necessary. If they do nothing within 2 weeks, you then can write for it. And they will be doing approximately 100 a week, they think, starting in the middle of August. But there are 19,000 school districts out of compliance right now, and probably 90% of the colleges are out of compliance, just in the area of women and men, or boys and girls, in terms of lack of compliance. Facilities, for example, they still have most of the courses that have primarily girls in it, like the beginning courses in the small gym. They still have that the boys practice from 4 to 6. The girls practice early in the morning when you get to intercollegiates. The boys use the shop and have the evenings when they can go back to the shop and work. The printing presses, all of these still, the prime times are given to the male. Those kinds of things are non-compliance of the regulations. But it's in the area of money that it's most easy to deal with. For example, University of Maryland, where I go, we spend approximately $4 million on men's athletics. Guess what we spent, I don't have the figures from last year, but 2 years ago, on women's athletics. Less than $500,000, $157,000, and the men spent $4 million. Ohio State spent $6 million. They had $140,000. The closest one that we have of the huge schools is UCLA. UCLA spends, we think, about $5 million, and the women's budget is $650,000. But she can have up to $1 million in the next 2 years. Now that's a terrible price tag, but that's what's being spent on the males. In the smaller institutions, just on one of our Lutheran colleges has spent $500,000 on men's athletics, $16,000 on women. $500,000 to $16,000, one of our Lutheran colleges. And so one of our larger universities, Lutheran, have just moved into Division II of NC2A, which means financial aid must be raised, and they have approximately someplace around $12,000 that we know of that's been spent. Now, one of the problems, of course, is getting the figures on it. But you're not immune in high school. One of the high schools in
right outside of Chicago was spending $40,000 for men and $5,000 for women. And that's just in athletics. Now, a lot of that, of course, is because we haven't really attempted it. But it shows the kinds of differences. Or on per capita spending for boys in vocational education and per capita spending for girls. It's something like $30 for the boys, 50 cents for the girls in terms of educating when girls now are asking for that kind of vocational education. We still are having trouble with the whole secretarial program. Awful lot of high schools still have secretarial programs primarily and given for girls. You can't, boys, for example, in Gary, Indiana, could not take typing unless they wanted to take the whole secretarial course. And how many, the percentage of boys that went to college which needed to type, all it means is that their wives-to-be ended up having to type. And that's just 2 or 3 years ago in terms of the kinds of programs. Okay, I didn't mean to talk that long, but any kind of question now that you have on what is happening, what ought to happen, any of the rules or the kinds of regulations or the effect? Yeah.
What do you think of this matter of scholarships being given by private individuals? The University of Minnesota is having a problem right now, you probably know Paul Gilley, athletic director, where it's very easy to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars from corporations and from very wealthy alumni who have been active in the sports program. And they say, well, Paul, we'll give you $50,000, but it has to be designated for men and not for women's sports. Do you feel that's acceptable?
No, but I don't feel like it's acceptable that they're getting the money. But according to Title IX, according to Title IX, they cannot do that unless somebody comes up with a proportionately equal amount. And that's why they're in court.
If you don't take it, then you also hurt the men's program.
That's correct. But the question is, holding to a principle, can you then help both the men and the women's program by virtue of demanding that they go ahead and keep their money or else that they share it in terms of what is it they really want? They want a, selfishly, they want a great football team
sure.
that they can watch
That's
in
right.
it. But now that hasn't gone to court, though, beyond the federal level. I have a feeling that they may be given the right to designate that if the institution gives some kind of proportion. It may be a $60,000 to a $10,000 proportion. The difficulty of some of that is that they're not really in their regulations. They're also having problems of not going through the financial aid office in terms of need in it. But the University of Minnesota was also the one that had the athletic scholarship in which the girl had achieved the 2.8 cum too in it. They have an affirmative action program in Minnesota and in the high school, which really is quite good, which is why Minnesota is being attacked on it. They have a very, very active wheel group in Minneapolis, and that's really how it got started. The girls program also on the high school level has been much closer to the boys in Minnesota than almost any other state besides Illinois and Iowa in some areas, obviously not in others. But I think if we're going to fulfill Title IX, as we understand it so far, that what happens, of course, as I see it, is we just help women to be as corrupt as men. And well, you can't give outright gifts to athletes. No, you cannot do that. If he's going to participate under NC2A Division 1, 2, or 3, or AIAW, you cannot give. Immediate families are the only ones that can give gifts. Everything must go through the institution. Even the booster club money must go through the institution. And also the junior college governing bodies. All the governing bodies has determined that everything must go through the institutions. Otherwise, that's all you would have. And, of course, that's where the cars are coming from and all the graft is coming because that's really what's happening in some kind of indirect way. Or they have a work-study system that's not really a work-study kind of system. The only leadway right now is the amount.
Now, you said that every high school district, every college needs to have what kind of an officer?
A compliance officer. And every institution has to have somebody that you can go to and say, that's your compliance officer.
Every institution or every district?
In the college, every institution. In the high school, it can be a district. But they are asking that each school also have what they then call affirmative action officer. But those are not the mandated. And if something's not mandated, you may not have one in the high school. Although usually they make it the assistant principal, and he's supposed to write a few facts down on it. But if anybody files, that's where it begins to take effect. And there have been a few, there's been a case study of those that had filed. In Bowling Green filed, for example, in Ohio. Miami of Ohio filed, and they compared it with North Carolina, and the University of Maryland is one of the subject matters. So far as we know, with the exception of Rice University, no one has had their federal funds cut based on Title IX. Berkeley was threatened last year. Berkeley has now moved so that they're getting $650,000 within 2 years for women in athletics. And their problem dealt with the admissions policy in part, and its admission to professional programs is where they are attacking the most. The engineering program, because they're not taking affirmative action of getting women in engineering, the law, medicine, and nursing. And nursing is reverse discrimination. And the nursing women are the worst for trying to get compliance, because the males are applying with the same grade averages in some of the nursing programs, and they're trying to keep them out of it. The fear being the administrators. You know, women, nursing is one of the few areas in which we've had administrators, and that's one of the problems.
Yeah. From a very practical standpoint, you cited the difference among the money spent for the male athletics and the female. I'd be hard put to find a school district, whether it's high school or college, that is not already in financial trouble. How are you going to equal that without harming the men?
We're not going to. We're going to harm the men, in a sense, by virtue of the fact that we've been discriminated against too long. I mean, it's a simple mathematical problem. The public that has 50% of the population seem to be girls. And so, in the sense of, the law says they have to stand for it, which is one of the things. But obviously, attitude is far more significant in it. But one of the things that we've asked for on the collegiate level, and by the way, the collegiate level has not cut in any of the large institutions, of the 243 institutions of the male from NC2A that complained, none of them have cut any of the male programs. But what they have begun to do is not spend $70,000 to go to Pueblo, Utah, to try to get a player that ended up in the pro. Maryland spent $70,000 to get three players and got zip on them. But on the high school level too, they're spending money on football uniforms that may not be essential. We may well have a soccer program for males that could be just as exciting as the violence of football, for example. And basketball, for example, does not cost a great deal for any high school. And so it's how the men, coaches, for example, are spending their budgets. School districts who have looked carefully, finally, at the male budgets in terms of the crunch have easily found money to change. And as far as I'm concerned, they've had it all along, and if anything, yeah, the men's program can suffer.
Well, I think that's a mistake. They haven't found the money easily. I'm in high school administration myself, and have been for a long time. That money doesn't come that easily. I think that's a word you should use.
Well, no money is easy money, I suppose.
It's easy money to find it.
No, but in terms of if they can find it for the males, in dividing it up and how they spend it.
Yeah, but don't say we find it easy.
Okay. You're right. No money is easy money in athletics, or in band, or any place else.
Right. There's a financial crunch for most of us, and it isn't easy money.
Yeah, that's, you're right.
Speaking of attitude of the public, don't you think that ERA, if it's passed, will have an influence on all of this, if it is passed, on attitude?
No, I don't think it's going to have such an effect on attitude, perhaps on rules. The only thing I value the ERA for is already to attempt to change attitudes, as opposed to the actual passing of it having such a positive effect. We can do all of the same things in ERA with the 14th Amendment, for example, and certainly now with the various titles. I'm not sure that it would have, and it may have not had.
I'm going to change Sure. Little office athletics. I wonder how much Great. Title IX has affected hiring practices of the local church.
in terms of salaries offered to men and doing much the same work as, say, a parish worker, or in my particular parish, we have a school. I know that the male teachers most of the time get more money than female teachers, and that's, I mean, that's about 30 years ago by in public school standards. I wonder, you know, say directors of parish education, has there been any kind of case that you know in terms of
Because the church is not under Title IX in an educational sense, but their schools. Yeah, there are people that are now filing from the parochial schools in terms of what the males are getting and what the females are getting. They would have to file a class action suit.
In other words, a class action suit could be brought to in terms of the educational system if it was an elementary school.
But right.
It couldn't be used to say make sure that female missionaries got the same amount as male.
No, they would have to then have a private suit. 14th Amendment suit.
Yes.
But because of what's happening in Title IX, there's going to be a lot more chance for it. They also can file, by the way, on the Department of Labor. And that's what some of the churches are doing, is filing under Department of Labor. But they're really afraid to touch that, just as they're afraid to touch a lot of the rules and regulations within the church bodies.
You mentioned money for the various programs, and I think the other day someone said, how many times have you seen football players coming around door to door asking you to buy candy so that they can go to, say, a football state contest or something? And how many times do you see band members coming around so they can take a trip to some place to play? And I think there you might find inequality as far as money is concerned for the different.
Oh yeah, and the major sports and the minor sports too. There's no question that doesn't get covered under Title IX. That only gets covered by your local school board and the influence. Actually, what they've done on the college level is steal from Peter to pay Pauline, which is taking from the minor sports of the men and giving it to the women. And then trying to make women's basketball, for example, and volleyball, which does have the potential for a revenue-producing sport in it. But there's no question that everybody except the athletic department. It would be fine with me if the athletic departments of the high schools and colleges had to do that. If they would supply some of the money for intramurals, I actually would like them to spend a lot more money on the intramural program some way. But with the financial crunch, it's certainly going to be only those school districts that are making money on their football games or their basketball. There are some school systems, by the way, Rockford, that cut out all interscholastic for both male and female last year. And there's a lot of schools that are cutting out junior high interscholastic programs, and I'm not sure that's all bad if they can get an intramural program, which certainly would be cheaper and would permit more people to participate. But Title IX can't take care of anything that's not different between the sexes or between colors or between religions if it interferes. It really only has to do with discriminatory action within a whole class group. So that has to be dealt with on your local kind of school level. But it's interesting that it has helped our curriculum programs because they've been forced in physical education, for example, and home ec to review them. And there's now money available from the federal government to support an awful lot of grants on the high school, on the college level, for curriculum kinds of designs. By the way, it does not deal at all, Title IX, with sex stereotyping or textbooks. Textbooks is an entirely different issue, in which one of the compromise measures of Title IX was not to have textbooks. And that was purposely done by the National Education Association, and probably not such a bad idea, so that they would not interfere with your curriculum developments, which is a county or a state freedom. It really does, in some ways, interfere and lean towards a socialistic pattern, the title itself, on it. Any other questions on it? If not, it's about time for the lunch world anyway. And I thank you for listening, because I think it is one of our important steps. What happens in all of it, sport is not so important to me in and of itself, except as my profession, but I think it's the most visible way of demonstrating the kinds of discrimination, with the second most being employment. And that if we can get models, role models, with the men in elementary, and the women on some of the administrative levels, that education is where it's at in terms of the catalyst. And that therefore, once you have the catalyst in education, that it then can spread out to the church, The church would not be having this problem if education didn't already have it. I don't think there's too many people concerned, really, about the biblical problems of women in the ministry, for example. But a cultural kind of problem or sociological problem that we've had, and it's most demonstrated in church, in physical education, and in the administrative level of education, and probably 80% in higher education in terms of it. And by starting here and forcing it, even if by law, I think that we can have the attitude changes until it doesn't seem so strange that girls are going to demand that either nobody gets it or we get it too. And it may sound a little kid-like, but that seems to me has to be the hard course that you take in order to prevent behavior patterns of the past in it, and that this is the cheapest way to go in terms of court suits. 14th Amendment is a really expensive way to go when you have to go through our federal court system. Class action suits in this way seem to be the easiest way to go. But it's each one that has to change the human dignity and human potential problems so that each one is free to meet it. So if you're born with pink booties or blue, you're going to have equal access. And I don't care whether you take it or not. That doesn't concern me at all. But if the boy wants to learn to cook, I want him to be able to cook. You know, and that's what we have best here, really. And if they want to really play, I want them to be able to reach their full human potential. And I think that's what the title really is all about. You know.